This week on Hyperspace Broadcast, we kneel at the altar of the original Gundam series, Mobile Suit Gundam. Hey everyone, and welcome once again to Hyperspace Broadcast, the podcast where two real friends, as opposed to all those fake friends out there, of which I'm sure there are many, watch a program broadcast on Toonami and try to determine if it's worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're covering the first 11 episodes of Mobile Suit Gundam, the original Gundam series from 1979. I'm not sure why I suggested that most podcasts aren't actual friends talking to each other.
It's a weird statement to start the show off with.
Yeah, it's a really weird like dig for no reason at
on nothing.
Yeah, right, on my fellow podcasters.
Mark Maron doesn't have that many friends.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I guess disregard that, but Mobile Suit Gundam is, I was very excited to watch this show. I'm not going to attempt to disguise the fact that I am a fan of the Gundam franchise in general. So sure. Seeing this has been quite an interesting experience. And I guess we should probably get right into it because there's a pretty large amount to talk about. I mean, again, This is like the show that spawned a massive franchise that is ongoing.
And so I've been a fan too, not quite to the describing every different model type of Zaku, but I'm there.
Yeah. Not quite to the level where sadly I was like limiting myself in my description of the like pre story stuff.
What do you, how do you mean?
Well, we'll get to it.
Backstory lore shit that you.
Yeah, that I know, sadly. I mean, I guess because they've made shit that relates to that, but whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So this show was originally made by director Yoshiyuki Tomino, who drew from a pretty wide variety of sources, among them Robert Heinlein's Starship Troopers, space battleship Yamato, and supposedly the Japanese occupation of Manchuria pre-World War II, which is kind of interesting.
Not a fun time for anyone.
Yeah, no, that's horrible, obviously. So his intention was to make it more of a serious war story, and that does kind of come through, but it was softened a decent amount, partly due to the idea of like making it a bit more toyetic. The main thing is like the original design for the Gundam was basically the same, except that it was mostly kind of this gray, like solid colored thing, and it was eventually recolored to be the white, blue, red, and yellow that is now the color of every Gundam for the rest of time.
Which makes no sense.
But looks cool.
Yeah. Does it? It looks like a Fisher-Price toy. Fisher-Price toy. Sorry.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were a voice actor for Shenmue.
For Shenmue 2.
You're right.
Would you like to play a game of Lucky Hit?
And white base apparently was originally like supposed to be black, which makes sense because it's a spaceship. Like, why would it be fucking white? But it was changed in order to make it a bit more commercially viable.
Rotten kids.
Yeah, right. Despite that, it was kind of a failure. It was going to be canceled, but the staff negotiated for basically a 1 month extension so that they could actually finish the story.
Yeah.
Which is why it's like a sort of truncated 40-ish episodes rather than, the 50 you might expect from a show like this. But, of course, Bandai had the rights to make plastic model kits of the mechs in the show. These sold super well, and basically the rest is history. It became a huge-ass juggernaut that it is today. It's funny. I read a few interviews with Tomino before we started recording this, and he, at least in those interviews, was a bit salty still about the level of influence Bandai's toy production has had over the franchise, which is understandable.
Yeah, and you know, just coming in and being like, "No, change that. Change that. Actually, that's we want to sell toys." So that design's not going to work. It's no military vehicle of any sort would be all the primary colors at once.
Would be white. That doesn't make any sense. But another thing, of course, this show, you know, it's a huge franchise, but it also spawned the real robot genre. Prior to this, we had a lot of shows like Voltron, Voltus 5, etc., shows that were essentially about one big robot and a bunch of like usually teen heroes that are able to pilot it, and there isn't really a lot of consideration that goes into any aspect of it. It's just pretty cool, so it works. Gundam is still like, you know, it's not as real robot as say Votoms, but it is the precursor to that whole genre. So the idea is that these giant robots are being used in a military capacity instead of just being like, you know, magic artifacts basically. Yeah, or whatever.
Well, and also that there's like political motivations, and like the war is like much more realistic rather than compared to something like I don't know, He-Man or any other kid show where it's like the villain is just evil for the sake of being evil, make plot happen, and is just mean, and somehow has like an alliance with other evil guys who that barely ever get along, and it's just like, you know, a little more weight is thrown onto it.
Yeah, well, in terms and of, also
like, motivation,
right? And it's also probably worth mentioning that this prior to this, a lot of the shows Tomino worked on, Aliens were the bad guys, this is an early show to have the bad guys just be other people, which of course humanizes them to an extent, given that they are human rather than being aliens. So the English dub of this show was made basically to capitalize on the success of our previously covered series, Gundam Wing. And of course it was edited for content, which is not that surprising, having watched it now. Episode 15 is not dubbed, which is interesting because Tomino apparently specifically requested that episode 15 not be dubbed and
be skipped.
Yeah, sure. And again, like going through some old Q&A stuff, I found an archived transcription of a Q&A session with Tomino that was originally published as, and I quote, "Yoshiyuki Tomino panel, the daddy of Gundam, on animeondvd.com. by Andrew Tai." Anime on DVD.com doesn't exist anymore, by the way.
See, the title's pretty dated.
A little bit. I don't know. Maybe they would have updated it. It's now Anime on, I don't know, streaming services. 4K.com. Yeah. Right. But there's a great quote from Tomino regarding the lack of episode 15 dub, which is, "I asked that it would be skipped. There is a reason, but since the staff is still alive, I can't answer it. It's a long story."
Oh my god.
Which has a sinister overtone.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, you know, they did admit that some of this stuff might be kind of wonky translation because they were working through an interpreter, but still. That's a funny quote from Tomino. Tomino's quotes often are like really dark sounding. He seems like a very dark person. But of course, a bunch of episodes near the show's end weren't broadcast due to, as we've talked about before, the September 11th attacks. So, you know, they kind of cut down on the violent content on TV that was airing at the time.
Yeah.
And the final episode was broadcast during the New Year's Evil event, which we previously Tsunami. Covered as the home of the Garlic Jr. saga.
Oh.
Right.
Oh.
Of course, there's also like a series of novels that are actually written by Tomino that are essentially kind of more of the original vision for the show. It's darker, among other things. Amuro dies, but you know, that's something that might be worth checking out if you're interested. And there's a series of compilation movies that did pretty good business because they were released after Gundam was huge because of toys. But also they get rid of some elements of the show. There's no Gundam Hammer, for example.
Well, and truncating
too super robot-y.
Truncating 41 episodes into 3 movies is pretty rough.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's better than, say, truncating 40 episodes into 1 movie, as Voltus 5 attempted to do, but...
Now, come on. They just took, like, 3 episodes.
Yeah, sure.
It's not like that. It's not like that show ended. It just happened to stop.
Right. So, the primer of Gundam, basically, the year is... of course, an alternate calendar. This is Universal Century 0079. Billions of humans live in space in massive cylindrical colonies based on an actual theoretical space colony design, the O'Neill Island 3 design, which is a thing that I, upon learning, was happily geeked out about.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. They're really neat looking, kind of cylindrical with the inside of the cylinder is like... living space, like along the inside of the cylinder,
right,
going around,
and of course it's spinning to generate gravity through centripetal force.
Okay,
that's that whole thing with giant mirrors to reflect sunlight inside to kind of give the idea of a day-night cycle. So these colonies are out in space and they're in clusters generally called sides. The furthest side from Earth declares independence, calls itself the Principality of Zeon, and launches a war against the ruling government of all of these areas, the Earth Federation. Of course, the weapon of this new age is the Mobile Suit, which is an 18-meter-tall giant robot piloted by a single person.
Didn't they... Zeon had Mobile Suits first, right?
Yeah, right.
They made this big blitz...
Yeah, essentially. So using these like specific weapons developed for this kind of new age of war.
Zeon Zaku.
Yeah, right. The Zaku is the classic mook suit that is hilariously... that people are constantly amazed in these early episodes that Amuro can blow away Zakus in a single shot, which is really funny, given, you know, later shows like Gundam Wing, where...
where
the mooks are totally disposable morons and no one cares about them.
Several blown up in like one frame.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't even...
they don't have to be hit by bullets to explode sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, in the opening week of this new war, that through nuclear weapons use, poison gas use, and dropping one of these colonies onto the Earth, roughly half the population of Earth and all of the colonies dies. So that's, of course, billions. This is told to us in the opening narration of this show. So really...
it's told to us every time you start the show.
It's told to us. A reminder that people now live in space and die.
And die. And then an explosion happens.
Yeah, right. But fortunately, the Federation has a plan. Project V, which is the development of their own super badass mobile suits, among them the Gundam, and the transport to, you know, get them around, called White Base. So essentially the first episode sets up the series. There's an attack on this colony called Side 7 by Zeon forces. The Federation is trying to load these new mobile suits into White Base. The White Base's crew is basically massacred during the ensuing battle, and a bunch of civilians are kind of pressed into service aboard the White Base, which explains why everyone is, like, 15?
Yeah, under the age of 20.
Yeah, right, including the captain, who was originally, like, a cadet, who ended up serving because he's the last actual... commissioned officer aboard White Base.
Jesus. Yeah, that's something I liked too. I did not realize that also in the original, that they do reference the fact that these are basically child soldiers, and that is a thing. Because to me, it kind of goes away. Like Wing Gundam, they barely talk about it.
Yeah,
they'll sometimes
depends.
Just be like, they've been trained since birth, but they're only kids, and like, but otherwise, it's never brought up. And
yeah,
then, like,
and I mean, in Gundam Wing, like, that may be true, but at the same time, like, Trey's is in his 20s, and he's, like, the commander of the entire fucking Earth military. Like,
he is the supreme commander.
I mean, yeah, the actual main characters may be child soldiers, which is occasionally referenced, but for the most part, it's just accepted as, you know.
Yeah.
Standard.
So seeing that that was actually referred to in the past is pretty cool. I didn't know it would necessarily be that dark. The way I remember it as a kid was like, you know, it's just like, okay, we're on our ship and we're fighting the bad guys. But it's a lot more in depth than that.
So yeah, I mean, yes, they acknowledge freely that these characters are pretty young in this show, and I suppose that's as good an excuse as any to introduce the characters. We have our main character, Amuro Ray, who is at one point referred to as a techno freak. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean that he listens to techno while piloting the Gundam, although that's a super easy edit to make. He, of course, ends up in the cockpit of the Gundam and proves to be a fairly able pilot, although this is primarily because the Gundam is basically invincible and has extremely powerful weapons and a learning computer, and also the manual fell into his hands, basically.
Yeah, they talk about the learning computer, but I feel like that's something that never comes up in later Gundam stuff.
No, for sure it doesn't. I mean, again, like, it's kind of here to serve as an explanation of why this kid is capable of piloting this thing.
But yeah, it also helps that it's, like, basically, it is really just indestructible.
Yeah, right. Well, constantly people are shooting the crap out of it, and, you know, Amuro will, like, lurch back and forth in his seat in the same bit of stock footage. But, you know, there's rarely permanent damage to the Gundam because it's super fucking strong. So his childhood friend and sort of surrogate big sister slash mother is Frau Bo, who ends up as kind of a liaison between the crew of White Base and a bunch of refugees aboard from the colony that was destroyed. Bright Noah, of course, is the captain who was an ensign, and he is kind of like, I feel a little bad for Bright because he's put in this position of commanding a crew of civilian teenagers for the most part.
Yeah.
He is not averse to corporal punishment. He enjoys hitting people quite a bit.
Kai deserved it.
Kai deserved it. Amuro deserved it too. Like, Sayla Mass is a medic who ends up as one of the bridge crew, and she's pretty no-nonsense, has a connection to the masked adversary of Amuro and White Base, specifically that they are long-lost siblings. And basically, if Bright doesn't slap you, there's a good chance Sayla might. she is also happy to slap Kai around specifically. But again, Kai's a dick.
Kai really deserves it. Kai is the fucking... Let's talk about Kai. Kai is the Roger Klotz of this show. Anytime he comes in, he's just insulting Doug or Amuro.
Yeah, he's there purely to, like, make snarky comments and, like, sarcastic comments and whine about things, at least at this point in the show. Kai is a dick. Of course, there's also the main bad guy character, Shar Aznable, who is a character so infamous in Japan that there is, in fact, a Shar custom of many different products, such as the GameCube, which is just red and has a Xeon insignia on it.
It's a nice-looking GameCube.
It is. It's very nice-looking.
It's like the kind of Zaku...
A little salmon Shar pink Zaku kind of red. There's, of course, also a Shar's cut. Like, there's a car advertisement that features Shar driving the car and commenting about how well it handles.
And you can buy that car.
Right.
It's called Xeonic Toyota. Toyota really wanted to associate themselves with, like, the genocidal fucking
yeah, sure.
Xeon
the
forces.
The mass murdering, clearly yeah. based on Nazis in a lot of ways.
Char's very interesting. He's a character who has, like, clearly, like, a lot of mysterious motives.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he wears a fucking mask. Like,
right.
He has interesting motives. Basically, he's trying to get revenge against the ruling family of Xeon, who are these zombies, for reasons
spoiler.
That aren't really... He literally says this in one of the episodes.
Oh, really?
When he fucking kills Garma.
Oh, that's true.
Or causes Garma to die. Or to die, rather. But he's known as the Red Comet because he flies super fast. He's a skilled mobile suit pilot.
3 times faster.
Yeah, right. Which, of course, led to the most massive meme in all of Gundam, pretty much.
Yeah.
That and having to have a masked character and everything. But let's move on to the synopsis. As we've already kind of talked about the first episode, but effectively, there's a big fight. Amuro and Frau Bo and a bunch of these other civilian characters get caught up in it. Amuro gets into the Gundam, beats the shit out of a bunch of Zaku's, and White Base's crew is more or less annihilated during the attack. Char infiltrates Side 7. He and Sayla recognize each other as brother and sister. And then White Base escapes. So White Base and Char clash several times in various scenarios. Char is resupplying his forces. White Base decides to attack. White Base is trying to... re-enter Earth's atmosphere to meet up with Federation Command. Char attacks them while they're going down to Earth. You know, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah, he's attacking all the time. What I do like is when he's in a face-to-face combat with the Gundam, while he doesn't beat the Gundam because it's just too strong, he's clearly, like, way outskills Amuro.
Yeah, right, of course.
Which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, and that's fun stuff. I mean, in their first engagement, it's pretty clearly laid out that he runs the whole fight, but he just can't really do much about the Gundam because it's too powerful, essentially.
Made of Gundanium.
Yeah, right. Or I think it's Lunar Titanium in this. I think Gundanium's only a thing in Gundam Wing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. The Gundanium isn't a thing in this.
They definitely had to have an excuse for the power difference in Gundam Wing.
Yeah, sure.
Because that shit was exaggerated.
Yeah, even more insane, of course.
Yeah.
But the main thrust of this whole 11-episode arc is that while White Base is re-entering Earth's atmosphere, Char manages to force them into North America, which is controlled by Xeon, specifically a guy named Garma Zabi, who is this purple-haired, slightly effeminate Xeon commander who's very charismatic.
A bit of a dandy.
A little bit, sure.
Noble. He swirls around his hair. He's great. I love Garma.
Yeah, Garma's pretty fun. But effectively, this leads to a bunch more battles on the ground. During this time, a character named Hayato becomes the pilot of the gun tank, while Kai ends up piloting the gun cannon. Both of those basically less cool versions of the Gundam. One of which has a lower body of a tank, as you might expect from its name. Throughout this, Amuro's getting pissed off because, well, he's a teenager non-soldier who's being more or less forced to pilot the Gundam over and over again in every combat scenario. And they're constantly being attacked. So he's, like, not sleeping. Or
kind
eating,
of
really. Yeah, of course, because he's a kid.
Yeah.
Being forced to fight these battles. There's some subplot about the civilian refugees wanting to get off of White Base for several episodes. They eventually receive some resupply from a character named Lieutenant Matilda, who will show up again later, and who claims that Amuro might be a psychic, which is a joke in this context, but again, that will come up later. And Char is essentially using Garma to prove that the failure to capture White Base was not his incompetence so much as because the ship and everyone are super powerful. Like, it's absurd at this point how many Zakus and tanks and planes have been sacrificed at the altar of White Base. I would say,
or the Gundam.
Yeah, right. But just in general, like, there's so many, especially in these episodes, there's so many sequences where there's just tanks on tanks on tanks rolling towards White Base, blowing the shit out of it, and then the Gundam comes in and just murders them all. It's it's ridiculous. So White Base is finally about to get back into Federation airspace, and Garma basically tries a final attack. Char lures Garma into White Base's line of fire, and he gets shot down. And meanwhile, Char gloats over the comms to Garma about how he was a good friend, but still a Zabi, so he deserves to die.
Jeez.
Meanwhile, Garma's lover, who is introduced in this, a woman named Iselina? I'm not sure
Iselina.
Exactly. Iselina, yeah, that's it. Attempts to avenge him, but falls and dies from the fall.
Yeah.
And Amuro, Ryu, Kai, and Hayato bury her. Ryu, we haven't talked about, but basically he's another pilot. He's a big guy. Kind of a Ben Dixon, unfortunately.
Yeah. Kind of a goofy, clumsy big guy.
Yeah, so the way we wrap this arc up is that the Zabis are mourning their dead family member, and a mobile suit pilot named Ramba Rawl, the infamous mustached, slightly overweight dude, is sent to Earth, who's super old at the tender age of 35.
Jesus.
I suppose tender age isn't really correct there. The advanced age of 35.
Yeah, just the elderly age of 35.
the impossibly decrepit, like, mummy level age of 35 years old. that's Gundam in a nutshell. We should probably talk about our Zeniths and Nadirs. Do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. My Zenith is episode 8, Winds of War. This is an episode in which it's kind of like they're on Earth. Garma is encountering them sometimes still. The refugees on the ship are kind of... they're kind of pissed off, or they've kind of been pissed off lately.
Is this the one where they, like, revolt, actually?
It's not. That was, like, the one right before it.
Okay.
But in this one, they're, like, they're here going over the Great Canyon in North America. So try and figure that one out.
Yeah, I wonder what that's supposed to be.
Why is it not Grand Canyon?
Yeah, these are things that, you know, tend to happen with localizations. That's always really weird to me. I mean, the Great Canyon, where you'd think that, you know, people in presumably Canada, realistically, were the ones who were dubbing this. We're like, Great Canyon, that's supposed to be the Grand Canyon, right? Let's just change that. Nope. Great Canyon.
It's a Great Canyon.
Or New York is another one. I'm not sure they actually say New York, but that is what the city of New York is known as in this world.
But in any case, at some point in this episode, some of the refugees demand to be let off where they're staying. And this one woman and her child, she's like, oh, I know my husband's hometown is near here, so we're going to go there. And... basically, they head over. These Zeon guys flying a ship kind of escort the civilian drop-off as kind of a ceasefire truce kind of thing.
Right.
And it, for the first time ever, we're shown, like, the sympathetic side of Zeon soldiers. Like, there's just these, like, two, like, super nice guys.
Like, yeah, right. They're, the also just goofy. Like, there's one scene where they're flying and... Frau Bo is in a jetpack flying next to them, and she winks at them, and one of the soldiers, like, blushes and turns away. It is ridiculous. Like, it's these two guys are great.
There's really never any sympathetic Zeon character before this. I mean, like, you know, Garma is a character, but he doesn't...
Yeah, Garma, arguably, but he's not super sympathetic.
Yeah. And these are, like, Zaku grunts just, like, being kind to these these people and dropping off supplies. And it kind of makes you think like there's going to be a big misunderstanding and like something terrible is about to happen where they shoot down the refugees or something like that. But it doesn't end up happening.
I mean,
part of what I liked about this episode, you know, in the end, it turns out that there's a little bit of fighting and they manage to avoid the civilians, but the mother and child go off and try and find their hometown, only to find out that it was like destroyed years ago in probably in the colony drop when fragments of that blew up everything.
Something destroyed it so utterly that she's literally walking through a valley and the Xeon soldiers are like, oh, you're looking for that town? Yeah, it used to be right here.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's not even rubble. It's just gone.
And, you know, this is my favorite because even that, there's also, like, a little bit of, like, a showdown with some of the Zaku's and Amuro. And he does some, like, cool fighting maneuvers and stuff. Gun Cannon just pushes a Zaku off a cliff, which
is
great.
It's that classic shot.
Amuro,
there's, like a classic gif of that.
Throws his shield into the cockpit of a Zaku, which, like, kills the pilot. And, you know, the anti-war stuff in it is a little rote, but it's still, like, something I never would have seen in a show before then.
Mm-hmm.
And having that kind of depth to the, you know, people working for the bad guys, if you will, was still something pretty new, especially for its time.
Yeah, sure. I think it's kind of interesting this episode, too, because you mentioned that you thought there was going to be some misunderstanding where the Xeon guys like shot down civilians or some shit.
Yeah.
There's this bit where the Gundam is sort of infiltrated using the drop off of the refugees as, I guess, kind of a pretext to like hide in a lake and then pop out and shoot Zaku's in the back, essentially.
Yeah.
And he's like, Amuro's moving to this position and the Xeon recon plane with these two sympathetic Xeon dudes flies by and sees him or something. And at that moment, I was like, he's going to shoot them down.
Yeah.
And that's going to be how this episode ends. It's just like
the nicest characters in the show.
Exactly. Killing the two guys that we've spent an episode being like, hey, these guys are fun and kind of goofy. That does not happen, which I was honestly a little bit surprised by. But
yeah, right. You expect Gundam to always go dark when it can.
Yeah, right. So my favorite episode was honestly the first episode, episode one, Gundam Rising. We've already covered this episode as far as a synopsis, but basically the reason I like this episode a lot is that Gundam as a franchise is very self-referential, which can be a bit masturbatory sometimes, but at the same time, like, it's pretty fun when done well. And this first episode, the opening of the Zaku's infiltrating the colony, is a thing that is kind of repeated several times in other Gundam media. Like, Zeta Gundam starts in a very similar way. Gundam F-91 starts in exactly the same way, even down to some of the shots they use. And
yeah, right.
So it's like this weird sense of nostalgia watching this, which it's like I'm nostalgic for the thing, but I've never actually seen it before.
Yeah.
I hope that there's a word for that specifically, but I don't know. There's something very satisfying about seeing something that you've seen referenced many times, actually, you know, in the flesh, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Also, this is the episode that establishes the baseline level of brutality we can expect from this show, because when a crowd of civilians was behind Frau Bo, I expected them to get hit by a stray missile and all killed. What I didn't expect was for the show to cut back to a crater full of their corpses.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And that was the part where I was like, all right, we're in for something here.
This show's serious.
Like, Jesus, it would have been enough to do the first thing, but cutting back to it is crazy.
Yeah.
So,
and then Frau Bo being like, Mom!
Yeah, right, of course. There's a surprising amount of, like, actually fairly effective emotional stuff, even in that first episode.
Yeah.
But what was your least favorite episode, Peter?
My least favorite episode in this was episode 7, The Core Fighters Escape.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, tell me if you haven't heard this before, but I had some trouble picking a least favorite in this block.
Generally, take a drink, everyone.
Yeah, right. Generally, this show has been surprisingly more competent than I'd expected. Not that I thought, like, it was really shitty. Like, I mean, it's a cornerstone of a giant franchise for a reason, I assume, that isn't just toys.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, it's, you know, there's something there, for sure.
Right. But, you know, as a kid, when I saw it, I was like, nah, whatever. It looks stupid. It looks crappy, you know? The Gundams look a little too kiddie, and it doesn't look as cool as Gundam Wing or 8th MS Team, or, you know, which, of course, had, like, much better animation.
Because they were made, like, 10 or 11 years later.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. It's not logical.
If that... I mean, of course, I understand what you're saying, though.
As someone who's come to appreciate more, like, older animation, like 70s shit, I've grown to both... Well, of course, I can see the repetition and stuff. I've grown to really like it. Now, this episode... this is kind of a weird episode, though, because it's like it's just, like all the refugees like kind of revolt and take Frau Bo and the children hostage.
Right, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
which I was talking about earlier, which is kind of weird.
Interesting, you know, is an interesting idea, but like the voice acting kind of failed on this one a lot. Some of the voices for like the old men is very clearly just like. You know, it's voice actors doing an old man voice.
Yeah, there's a fun animation error where one's mustache isn't there for a wide shot, which is always fun.
And it's just like the same group of old men that almost looks like they're cloned. And they're just, you know, seemingly just kind of being whiny. I mean, I don't know. I get it.
Yeah,
I'm not saying refugees are whiners. I'm saying...
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't think we need to clarify that, I would hope.
Yeah,
but
I'm just saying, but... In the context of the show, these guys are just being like, ah, God, come on.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, fundamentally, it's a little hard to get on the side of people who take literally three, you know, below 10-year-old children and, like, a teenage girl hostage.
Yeah, right.
And, I mean, it's nonviolent, but, yeah, no, I had some problems with... And also at this point, like the refugee storyline has been going without much anything happening.
Yeah.
For like several episodes.
It's not like there's been like hints of things getting worse and worse for them or.
Right.
And it's just like, okay. And then like the other plot is the main character's name is Gundam, right?
Yes.
Gundam has to go out and it's Amuro. No, Amuro has to go out in the Core Fighter, which is like the center of the Gundam that can turn into a flying jet, because why not?
Yeah, sure. The Gundam can split apart. And
do reconnaissance, which to me is like pretty boring.
Well, the thing that's weird about this episode, too, is like they use this, you know, they spend a lot of time like detailing this weird like slingshot maneuver that they're gonna do to shoot the Core Fighter over enemy lines so it can contact the Federation's main HQ, and then like they do this and Amuro passes out, and then the rest of the episode is just them retrieving Amuro. Like it's just a weird, and then of course, you know, he finally, and he just kind of looks like he's passed out drunk when he's in the cockpit, too. Like, I don't know.
Now, there is one great part of this episode, and that's when Kai is just relentlessly talking shit on Amuro and, like, everybody for the entire episode. And to the point where it's like, Amuro could die, and he's, like, still talking shit. And out of nowhere, Bright just punches him in the face. And it's like, because he's being, like, so obnoxiously dickish, it was like, perfect.
Yeah,
like,
and
Kai, shut the fuck up.
Like, it's pretty funny. I do want to say, I don't know why I feel the need to clarify this, but
oh no,
I'm not a person who advocates corporal punishment.
Sure I know we've said multiple times it's like it's great whenever
Kai gets
someone
punched. Yeah, I mean that's not great, but this scene in particular is so funny because it seemingly comes out of nowhere. Like, it's literally a shot of just Kai, and then out out of the side of the screen, Bright's fist comes and hits him in the face. Like, it's, I don't know. It comes out of nowhere, and it's kind of funny.
And one thing I like about the fact that it acknowledges that these are children forced into these roles is that the characters can be angsty and shitty and not know how to deal with the shit in their life because they're teenagers. Like, it makes sense.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, Bright seeing that as, like, the correct answer of how to handle the situation, you know, is probably part of him being a child. At the same time, Kai being...
I'm not sure I'd call him a child, exactly. He's 18. About 20, but...
I thought he was, like, 18.
He's 19.
Oh. But, like, Kai is, like, such a relentless asshole, and I would bet that we're probably going to figure out some dark reason as to why he's such a dick all the time. Maybe.
Not sure about that. I think he just gets some character development generally.
Sure.
And he's established as like kind of a delinquent in
okay.
in the origin manga sl/ anime adaptation. So I think he's just kind of a prick.
Yeah.
So my least favorite was the last one we watched for this. I guess I'm just bookending this block with my favorite and least favorite.
Yeah.
It's episode 11, Iselina Loves Remains. So this is the episode where the former lover of Garmazabi is going after Whitebase to destroy them, and she ends up somehow getting into a Xeon operation to take down Whitebase, which doesn't make a lot of sense because she's a civilian. Anyway, you know, there's a bunch of mobile suits jumping on planes, and eventually she steps out of the cockpit of one plane with a pistol ready to shoot Amuro. And then, and I'm not kidding about this, she fucking slips and falls on her head and dies.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird that literally when it happened, both of us were like, wait, did she actually just slip and fall?
Yeah.
Like, I expected it to cut to a shot of, like, Char with a sniper rifle or something, just with a shit-eating grin. But no, she just falls. And, I mean, that's all it is, man. Like, this is a weird episode. I kind of appreciate following up on her storyline. Like, I appreciate treating her more as a character than just, like, a one-off girl that Garma macks on. But... The structure of it just makes no sense to me. Like, how does she get into this Xeon group to fucking kill this dude? Like,
and
she's a civilian.
It's weird because in the last episode, when Garm was dying, he starts doing like a suicide attack.
Yeah,
with his
he gets
giant
an
plane.
Epic, awesome death. Like,
and then, well, and then she does it, and she does the exact same thing.
Like, right,
she's gonna crash right into him. Only she gets to jump out afterwards and then slip and die.
right. But it's the other thing about this is, I mean, the slipping and dying is just such a fucking weak-wristed follow-up to Garma's death, which literally happened the episode before. Like, he gets a screaming death where he's trying to, you know, crash his plane into Whitebase, and they just barely make it out. And then she fucking slips. Like, it reminds me of one of the things about Halo Reach that pissed me off, which was that every Spartan in that game dies cool, epic deaths that are like some sacrifice, except, incidentally, the one woman who just gets shot in the head out of nowhere. And, like, I get the idea, you know, that, okay, this is like a, you know, war is random. You can die
chaotic.
For nothing kind of thing. And the same with Iselina, like, slipping and falling. You know, I get it. It's this kind of, you can die for nothing and, you know, who's even going to remember? But it's, I don't know. It just feels so lame when everyone else gets a cool death. And then you literally, again, I want to emphasize, slip and fall on your head.
Those holes are slippery, man. You can't just climb out onto them.
I mean, sure. Realistically, she's probably wearing heels because she's still in, like, civilian garb.
Yeah.
So I guess you probably would fucking slip, but...
If they showed a shot of her, like, heel breaking her ankle or something, which would be horrifying, but it would make more sense.
Sure. But no, she slips and falls, and then Amuro and company bury her, which is nice, but I don't know. It just... Fuck you. Like,
yeah, when in the end, Amuro's just like, how could she possibly hate me? Like,
sure.
What's that about? It's like, you're in a war, dude. I mean, yeah. I'm sure he'll figure that out.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. Not my favorite episode.
One thing I did like about that episode is that it has the zombie family reacting to Garma's death.
Right.
In Zoom City, the capital of the Principality of Xeon. But they all kind of get together and are like shocked and stuff. It's part of what I really liked about the Garma death episode right before then was like it shows Garma's father, the Emperor, like getting up and like being speechless, and like I think he drops his drink or something.
Yeah, he drops his cane.
Yeah, yeah.
Which the narration explains to us for some reason.
And I thought that was really cool. And just kind of like seeing how they all have to like kind of react to that, even though they're, you know, couldn't be more distant from our heroes mm-hmm. in terms of actual distance and also in terms of like ideological difference and difference in station. But it's still like they all have to kind of deal with this death and begin plotting also, because clearly this is a result of a plot against the family.
Yeah, or, you know, at the very least, like, they need to find some way to deal with White Base, which is just chewing through their troops like nobody's business. Like, yeah, I agree. We should get to the break.
Yeah,
let's we've been
do that.
Running kind of long. And when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about our thoughts on the show and then figure out a bet.
Hey, Garma, you read me? Blame this on the misfortune of your birth.
Char, you're not saying that...
You were indeed a very good friend to me. Don't take it personally. You can thank your father for this.
Mobile Suit Gundam will return in a moment.
Hey, everyone, it's Michael here during the break, just to drop the usual information. Our opening and closing music is, as always, Vapor Diving by Onatech, and the music for the bumpers that you just heard is Monkeys, also by Onatech. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud. Rights were secured through Jamendo. Our next full episode, where we cover episodes 12 through 20 of Mobile Suit Gundam, will release August 1st, and next week catch our minisode where we discuss a descendant of Gundam, Fang of the Sun, Dugrim. As always, you can submit a topic or show suggestion for our minisodes via DM on Facebook.com/HBpod, Twitter @HBpod, or our email, hyperspacebroadcastpod@gmail.com.
You got no right! Not even my own father hit me before!
And now, back to Mobile Suit Gundam. Hey, we're back, and let's talk about our thoughts on the show a little bit more in depth, just kind of overall.
Yeah.
I suppose I'll start if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so as I said at the beginning of this episode, I am a Gundam fan. I like the show a lot. I like the franchise a lot. I'm literally sitting at a desk with more than one partly assembled model kit on it. So... I have
runners of model kits on my desk as we speak.
Yeah,
also.
same. So, you know, of course I liked this show so far, but I'm pleasantly surprised by it because I was expecting to find it kind of difficult to watch, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it's dated. Like, it's old animation, everything's super colorful, you know, et cetera, all of these tropes that are, you know, being explored for kind of the first time here are at this point well worn.
Yeah.
It's kind of like watching Night of the Living Dead, you know? It's like, oh, this is so cliche. Well, of course, because it made those cliches.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what do you expect? And to be fair, like, I'm usually pretty capable of separating myself from that, so I guess I'm not that surprised that the show's been pretty enjoyable for me so far. But I think, too, like, something I'm learning about myself recording this podcast is that I'm pretty forgiving of dated animation and not great voice acting, as long as it's consistent. when
sure.
most of the voice cast is great, and then there's like one or two people who aren't, that's annoying as hell. Or, you know, in the case of animation just being rife with really creepy errors, you know, that's that can get pretty annoying too. But like for the most part, this show, I haven't seen a lot of errors. The errors there have been are like kind of funny. And I don't know, like it's as well written as I expected it to be. You know, I'm not sure I'd call it a masterpiece exactly, but it's a good show. Like I'm happy with it so far. I'm happy that I can overlook the things that I was expecting to hate.
Yeah.
Now
I too was pleasantly surprised, seeing as, you know, memories from when I was a kid. It was like, this is kind of a basic show. This is
It's outdated. It's old school, man.
Exactly. And it's like,
what is
this?
35 years old? That shit's
almost
ancient.
40. And it's going back and like taking it more seriously and actually watching it from the beginning, which I don't think I ever did as a kid. I think I just caught random episodes.
Of course,
it's cool just being along the way for this story and following and kind of like putting yourself in the mindset of the characters and realizing that one thing. If you miss like the first couple episodes or first episode, you kind of miss the whole like setup that these characters are desperate and they're fleeing.
Yeah,
you
sure.
know? And they're teenagers. You know, they don't know what they hardly know what they're doing. They're basically acting on orders that they have to act on to survive.
Yeah, and too, there's like a pretty consistent thing where the Federation isn't really giving them orders. It's just kind of like, well, see if you can make it to Federation airspace.
Yeah, it's kind of Oregon Trail like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
you have Gundam to make Trail
it across the trek to get to the next Federation outpost place, and they'll try and order you somewhere else.
it's Oregon Trail in reverse because you're going West Coast to East Coast.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. They have to end up at New York.
Yeah, they end up in New York and then they fly over to Europe.
But having that context is really important, and otherwise I can see where I would be like, oh, and this is just like whatever. It's just good guys and bad guys, but in a different way, you know, with their kitty looking mobile suits.
Yeah. And like, you know, compared to something like Gundam Wing, the plot isn't quite as intricate, which to be fair, thankfully, it's nice to have it a bit more simple. But yeah, I can totally see, like, if I just randomly stumbled into this show and saw like the Core Fighter episode, which doesn't really have much story purpose, I would probably feel the same way. It's like, sure.
And when more flashy examples existed, like Gundam Wing is
so
much
more
flashy.
And we're being aired like directly next to it, pretty much, because this and 8th MS team aired pretty close to each other.
And like the designs are already like look so much more complex or flashy, like in Gundam Wing, like there's it's just like everything is more like detailed and has like 10,000 more guns on it. Like, you might get like a Morning Star you can throw at a guy. I don't know why that's a thing.
Right.
So you have to kind of get past some of that stuff, especially if you came into Gundam through Gundam Wing.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It's worth it when you take it seriously.
Yeah, and I think it's probably like, I mean, I guess this is a final judgment / recommendation kind of thing, so I'll withhold that statement, actually. But there is one thing about this show that's starting to annoy me quite a bit, which, fucking surprise, surprise, given that this is from the same franchise as Gundam Wing, there's a lot of stock footage.
Sure. Yeah.
I get it. It happens. it's a common thing in shows like this. Like, it has to happen, but I don't know why I'm so much more forgiving of stock footage in something like Sailor Moon than I am in this.
At least like, with Sailor Moon, like, they have transformation sequences that are, it's at least very good looking stock footage. And
sure.
It's part of the show. Like, the repetition of that is kind of part of the deal.
Well, and it always, I mean, I think the way I've thought about it before is I think it's it always happens the same way, and there's not really a lot of variety in how it could happen, so I don't really mind just being shown the same damn thing over and over. But again, like, I don't know how many more shots of Amuro lurching back and forth in his cockpit from being hit by a gun or whatever I can take. Like,
yeah, right.
That shit's getting kind of old already. And I don't know. I'm pretty excited for Rumba Rawl, though.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Rumba Rawl has some of the like best lines in Gundam.
He's just kind of like the crotchety old man mentor / villain.
Yeah, right. Pilot in a super cool looking mobile suit.
Hell yeah.
With a kind of goofy name. Oh, God, kill me.
Shut
I
up.
Hate that I just made that joke. All right, so we should get to the bet. And I have a couple of, that's the movie where Rumba Rawl has to connect with his kid by going on a road trip
a
before his kid goes to college. Yeah.
Where Rumba Rawl goes on a road trip in a goof.
Yeah, sure. And his kid's like
piloting
shotgun.
the little flying thing that it flies in on.
Oh yeah. The bomber thing.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. All right, I'd watch that for maybe 15 minutes and then turn it off to do something else. Well, we should talk about the bet, though. I have a couple of suggestions for this. My first one is going off of what we were talking about before the Goofy movie, which is stock footage. We could easily go from, say, Amuro lurching back and forth in his cockpit, or there's a specific shot of the Zeon fighters called Dops forming up that they've used quite a few times. So we could do that. Now, another time that another thing that I think might work is the number of times Bright or possibly just anybody hits anybody else.
Yeah.
Like,
I like that.
Yeah, I feel like that's a Gundam thing. Unfortunately, this isn't Zeta Gundam, so we don't have like a YouTube montage of just people slapping each other and punching each other, which is maybe my favorite thing about Zeta. But so you want to do that? I think
let's do like white base crew. Punching.
Yeah.
Punching or slapping.
Interpersonal violence, we'll call it.
Sure.
Among the white base crew. Like if Char gets aboard, for example, and starts kicking people around, that doesn't count.
Yeah, no, they can't be enemies.
No, it's only friends punching each other. Like we did when we stupidly had a fight club that we did once.
Can't even call it that.
It wasn't.
We had like half fights sometimes to see if we were good at fighting.
Yeah.
Stupid.
I was once punched into a couch off my feet.
That was pretty awesome.
That was crazy. Anyway. Okay. So
who's going to bet first?
I guess go first. I'll say
you go
four.
Okay. I'm going to go two.
Okay, cool. Four and two. And the classic rules, so basically, if it's between hours, the person with the lower bet wins.
Yeah,
that's how we usually do it. Alrighty, well, this is going to be a lopsided episode because the break is about an hour into it.
That should happen.
We've been recording for about 5 minutes after the break, but there was a lot to cover with this show, and of course, I'm super geeked about it, so I had to talk about Tamino saying that he can't talk about episode 15 being cut because the crew is still alive.
So are we going to watch that episode next week or
no? No, that is not on the schedule.
Want to
skip that one.
Do it straight for we'll watch how it was aired on Toonami.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Much like we did with Robotech where we just randomly end the end of the story.
And Sailor Moon, where you skip the fun beach episodes.
Oh, yeah. Well. Yeah.
And then it was not that kind of beach episode. It was
I know.
Bikini
I know. Come on, jeez, that's not what I was getting at. I was just thinking those were probably pretty skippable.
I'm not sure
I need to see Rini befriending a dinosaur or whatever the fuck happens in one of them. Does that actually happen, or am I just confusing that with Dragon Ball Z?
No, I think you might be, because I know Gohan does.
Yeah, right, of course.
I think Rini might also.
Great.
Kids and dinosaurs, man.
So hopefully in one of these episodes, somebody befriends a dinosaur.
Yeah,
if that happened in Gundam, I'd be very happy.
One of the kids in the precocious kid bunch, who are just like a bunch of like 4-year-olds
If we can have the precursor to Pacific Rim and it's just a Gundam punching a T-Rex in the face, I would be pretty damn happy, but sadly that's probably not going to happen.
I don't think Tamina would allow that.
I could just see the Bandai executives now, like, come on, just put in a dinosaur. Kids love dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs are huge right now.
And Tamino's just holding his head in his hands at his desk, like, god damn it. Just,
I want to make a statement about war.
Fine, I'll put in the G armor. Are you happy?
Yeah. They made a bunch of a list of like things. It's like you either put a dinosaur in there or you put like a stupid transformation of the Gundam.
Like, yeah, fuck. A plane that flies around and has tank treads, because I guess that's the thing of the late 70s in anime.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Again, Ramba Rawl, the 35-year-old, very old man.
Yeah, Ramba Rawl.
But until we get to Rumble Roll, the founder of the concept of putting things in controllers that make them shake when you get hit in a video game. I've been Michael Doak.
I've been Peter Eby.
And this has been Hyperspace Broadcast. Be sure to revisit us next week.
Bye-bye.
Good timing, Scout. Hey, thanks for listening. If you'd like to support the show, please follow us over at facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter @HBpod, where we post all of our episodes as well as additional content related to what we've been watching. That's also a great way to get in contact with us, of course. Subscribing on iTunes is also a surefire way to stay up to date, and while you're there, consider leaving us a review. See you next week.